Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the news from the video games industry and occasionally share our thoughts on said news. And today I am accompanied by none other than Ed Mitchell, and my name is Patrick Beja. We are here to serve the news and game impressions to you, including, but not limited to, Divinity Original Sin 2. Hey Ed, how's it going?
Hey Patrick, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. You were telling me before we started the show that you're still happily married.
It's been several weeks now.
Success.
It's been,
excellent.
It's been about 9 weeks. Not that I'm counting or anything like that.
Now, you were telling me that you went to a wedding this weekend. Uh-huh. And, you know, it reminds me of when I first got married and we would go to, you know, events and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, now we're married. We're cool. Like, we're the... It's funny because when I don't know if I mentioned this when you first came on after being getting married, but I always had the impression when I was younger that, like, married was half a chore. And now it's like, it's awesome. It's like everyone I know who's... Well, almost everyone I know who's married is super happy and, like, proud of it and flaunting it in people's faces. So.
Now Patrick has a superiority complex when it comes to marriage. I just got really drunk at the wedding, so
yeah. So you didn't have to. Unlike at your wedding, you didn't have to save appearances.
Yeah, no. Everything was fun.
Cool. Excellent. Right, but you also played a bunch of video games.
Yep.
Including, as I mentioned,
not at the wedding, just one of the
You mean you didn't go with your Switch to the wedding?
I had it in the car, but
in case things get boring, you can abscond, and yeah, that's probably a good idea. But yeah, so I have actually purchased Divinity Original Sin 2 for the show, and so I can also weigh in a little bit on the game, and we'll get to it, but it makes me uncomfortable. That game makes me uncomfortable to talk about, and I'll tell you why. But first, I think we need to mention the Tokyo Game Show that happened last weekend, and I guess how disappointing it was. It felt like we're going to talk about the few games that there is stuff to say about, but disappointing, right?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot there. I think that the Sony had weighing so heavily on their Western first party releases, I don't think they really wanted to show off a lot. We got a little bit from Square Enix, but that's about it. I think that if we're gonna wait for Sony to actually like reveal a bunch of stuff, it's going to be at their PlayStation Experience, which I don't think happens till like the end of holiday season. So
it's December, pretty much what, yeah, early
yeah
December.
Pretty much what we get this year is what has already been announced and are known quantities. Oops. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think there's that's exactly what's happening, because Sony is the only manufacturer that matters in Japan, obviously. I say only. Obviously, there's Nintendo as well, but they manage their communication worldwide now, and Microsoft doesn't matter in Japan. They don't, you know, even less for this generation than the previous ones. And I think we're seeing the limited abilities or capacity for development of Japanese developers, because this year we've seen an incredible amount of games and you know, major games from them. And they need to refresh, you know. They don't they're not EA or Ubisoft or Activision Blizzard, you know. They need to take a second, and they can't announce 5 or 6 gigantic games every year. And I think that those that might be able to are going to, as you mentioned, are going to wait to announce stuff at more worldwide, world-reaching venues. We have obviously E3, and then there's Gamescom that has some international reach. The PlayStation Experience has become a big thing now for the past few years. And we also have Paris Games Week, where Sony does a conference, but I'm guessing it's not going to be huge. So what we're left with is games that have mostly local reach for Japan. And some of those were interesting, but not like, it's more of the kind of niche interest type of games that are not necessarily going to be AAA. One thing that I noticed, or that the world took notice of, was that Hokuto no Ken game, which I guess most Americans will know it as Fist of the North Star. How popular is it in the US? In France, it's very popular with my generation, that Fist of the North Star, but I don't know how many people know of it even in the US.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know about it until you just... I mean, I don't even know about Fist of the North Star.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's that weird Mad Max type setting with the martial artists fighting one another, and they use weird techniques that make each other explode or that slice each other's in little bits. You've never heard of this?
So it's not a fighting game. It's kind of more a little more action adventure kind of style.
Yeah, I guess I should start at the beginning. Originally, it's a manga and an anime.
Uh-huh.
And it's this. I can't believe you've never heard of this. That's funny. It's like, it's so popular here. It's kind of like on the second tier of Dragon Ball Z. Everyone knows it, and Fist of the North Star is like that second or maybe even third tier, but it's pretty well known, especially with my generation. It's not Naruto levels, but kind of almost, at least for people of my age. And yeah, it's like, it's crazy because they have these weird fighting styles that make other, like they poke the enemy in like in the face and their finger enters into their like skull, and then they go away and the guy doesn't understand what they're saying, and he's like, he has this iconic phrase saying like, you don't even know it, but you're already dead. And in the background the guy's head explodes, like, and it's super, like, it's the kind of crazy Japanese
over the top
that, yeah. And so, yeah, anyway, so I guess that game is not going to mean a lot to you, but it's Hokuto ga Gotoku, which people who know that game series will know that it's a mix between Hokuto no Ken and Ryu ga Gotoku, which is the Yakuza series. That series is somewhat known in the West, but it's kind of a wacky... I want to say GTA, but it's not entirely true. But it's set in Japan in the world of Japanese mafias, you know, the Yakuza, obviously. And in a kind of not realistic, but semi-realistic area of Kyoto, of Tokyo, I mean, sorry. And so that's the two are a mix. The game is a mix between the two, that weird post-apocalyptic universe in that kind of GTA-like gameplay, except it's completely wacky, and you have that martial artist warrior having to manage a hostess bar. And, like, it's it's weird. It's probably very niche, but I guess that's the kind of the level of niche we have to, quote-unquote, sync to get games from that TGS. I think that means something about how... minor it was. Is there a game that you noticed from TGS?
Yeah, I mean, Left Alive, the mech game, seems kind of cool. I don't know if you've seen one of the trailers, but one of the trailers literally looks like Metal Gear Solid, like the kind of the not the way the game plays, but just the, it looks like the key art of Metal Gear Solid, where you have like the three people that are kind of in cartoon look to it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the designer,
they're definitely trying to call that.
They're playing that up, definitely. And the character designer is Yoji Shinkawa, who is the character designer for Metal Gear Solid. So, and even the aesthetics of the game, I know. I mean, it's based in the world of Front Mission, I think. Mm-hmm. but it feels like it's a mech game, and you have like even the colors that feel Metal Gear-ish. So there's definitely that kind of aesthetics, I think intentionally, but maybe not. But so that's an action game, third person, or?
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty cool. It's being described as like survival action shooter, and I don't know exactly what that means, but I'm hoping that it has a pretty cool, maybe a cool story mode. I mean, with the character artists there, they're not just going to use those for like, it's not like you're never going to see those characters, right? Mm. That's what I'm thinking, because like otherwise they're just always in mechs, right?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that we actually get a cool mech based story game. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it's apparently it's kind of reminiscent of Armored Core, and mm-hmm. that kind of game. Again, it's not the most incredible trailer you've ever seen. But that's what we're doing for in TGL.
Yeah, just a little teaser, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then sorry, I'm still nursing the end of my cold. Monster Hunter World has a release date. And by the way, Hokuto ga Gotoku, if you're interested in that, it's coming out in February. And Monster Hunter World comes out in January. So that's going to be available. I'm still on the... in the crowd of I would love to find the joy of Monster Hunter, but every single game I've ever played, demo I've ever played of those games, keeps me outside, and I'm not sure Monster Hunter World is going to change that. It's still very much Monster Hunter, or at least that's what it feels like.
Yeah, but it's a full-fledged game on the PlayStation 4 instead of like relegated to in 3DS or something like that, you know? So it might be cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be very cool. But you're right. Yeah, it's PlayStation 4. Originally, it was a Sony game. It was on PlayStation 2, I believe. Maybe 3. Mm-hmm. And then they switched to the 3DS. And now they're back to Sony. So that's exciting for the fans. Yeah, that's... Again, it's for the people who love that series, who are less numerous in the West, I think, than in Japan. We also had a little bit of Dragon Ball FighterZ still capturing the headlights. What's the name I'm looking for? Headlines. There you go, not headlights. Final Fantasy IX is on PlayStation 4 for those who want that. More images of the remake of Shadow of the Colossus for PlayStation 4. Looks really good. I think this one is worth mentioning, that a lot of people didn't play Shadow of the Colossus when it came out on... Was it PlayStation 2 or PlayStation 3?
PlayStation 2, it got remade on PlayStation 3, but it was just a one-to-one, it wasn't a remake even, it was just a kind of a port, like a graphics up a little bit, make it have like widescreen. But this one actually looks like they're like going into the textures, at least of the enemies, and upping the resolution of the textures, which makes it look a lot better.
Yeah, they're actually remaking the assets. So, that's going to give the opportunity to a lot of people to actually try the game. So that's probably a good thing. And last thing I wanted to mention, we're talking about Sony a lot. And as I said, it's because there's only Sony there. Their press conference was so low key. It was like, do not get your expectations up. It was a guy in front of a screen barely bigger than a TV and a bunch of journalists in a small theater, and that was it. And no fanfare, no fireworks, no nothing. But they did mention a little bit about PlayStation VR. They did talk about it. My French-Japanese friends keep telling me that VR is big in Japan because of porn, which... I'm not sure how they get porn stuff on PlayStation, but apparently it's getting sold out all the time. Oh, by the way, they just announced there's a new revision of the hardware of PlayStation VR, which is just the same thing, but with less cables. So that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's going to be releasing very soon. So, but not a lot of less, not a lot less cables, but just a few. But it's good that Japan is leading, you know, PlayStation VR efforts still. And yes, it's because of porn probably, but most new formats get popularized because of porn. So that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it for Tokyo Game Show. I feel a bit sad, but it's, you know, it's an off year. Japan has become a small territory for, not a small territory, but not as big as it used to be. And we've had such an incredible year for Japanese games that I don't think we should be bitter about them not announcing a bunch of stuff at this Tokyo Game Show again. Especially since we are getting Japanese games and Nintendo is doing wonders. So yeah, it's just that TGS.
One quick mission, Okami HD coming out for the big three systems. Yeah. It was on the most recent system it was on was the Wii and the PS3. So it'll be cool to have that game on something that I can actually have plugged into my TV, you know?
I never played Okami.
Zelda.
So what was the... It's what? It's a Zelda?
It's Zelda, yeah.
But
it's
you Zelda play the wolf and there's the thing about like the ink and the...
Yeah, no, it's... the art style is beautiful. It looks like one of those Japanese like ink paintings, you know?
Right.
And so, I mean, I'm looking... I haven't actually played it, so having it in a place that's a little bit more readily accessible would be nice.
Right, so it will give you a chance. But the game is kind of an adventure-type Zelda game.
Yeah, very much so. It has the same, like, you know, you go into a dungeon and you get an item that allows you to unlock more areas of the dungeon, and you use that item to fight the boss in the dungeon and stuff like that. So
cool, yeah. And the art style is definitely the thing that makes it stand out. And it would be cool if they actually remake it, taking advantage of the, at least a little bit, of the power of the modern systems, it would be good to have.
Yeah, it's definitely so the PS3 version was called Okami HD. So I don't know if it's just going to be a straight port or they're actually going to up the resolution up to the textures or not. But even the PS3 version looks beautiful. So I have no doubt the PS4 version and the other consoles are going to look good too.
Cool. All right. So there's that, and that concludes the TGS report. but we have other exciting things to discuss, including Divinity 2, Divinity Original Sin 2, which kind of blew up, I don't want to say the internet, but blew up the critics' rankings systems. Mm-hmm. Everyone is ranking like 90% or above, and so I definitely wanted to talk about it on the show, and I don't usually do this because this is not a review show, but I did go out and purchase it to give it a try, because it was just like when everyone is saying this game is awesome and incredible and, you know, it's 9 out of 10 by everyone. I don't know where it sits on Metacritic right now. I'm going to check it. But let's see. Metacritic, I'm pretty sure it's still in the 90% range. That search thing on Metacritic.
95.
Is so 95, there you go. That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
95 for a game that has been reviewed extensively. It came out like 10 days ago, maybe 2 weeks. So, yeah. What did you think of Divinity Original Sin 2? Oh, let's maybe define what kind of game it is first.
I can talk about that a little bit. Sure. Go ahead. The game is like kind of a point and click RPG. Not like a point and click adventure, but like you actually use the mouse to move around. It's kind of like Diablo. When you get into combat, it's more turn based. You have a certain amount of action points and you kind of figure it out, but it's basically just one of those RPGs, kind of like Pillars of Eternity and other games like that.
Baldur's Gate and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
Baldur's Gate, yeah. So, from my perspective, it kind of leans a little bit too heavy on the old school, like, systems a little bit. So it kind of feels a little old school, but maybe that's the reason why everyone's loving it, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the elements that brings a lot of affection from many of the people who review it is the fact that it is in the vein of those games that were trying to emulate an actual pen and paper role-playing game. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it is kind of an incredible achievement because it is so vast, you know?
It is not forgiving either. If you make a mistake, your guys are going to die. I think I've already gone through all of my resurrection scrolls that I have in my character's inventory. Just in the, I mean, in the first like real section of the game, my perspective on it is that there's not much, like you get out of Fort Joy, you get another area and there's maybe like three or four more areas after that, if that, but the, actual, like each individual area is chock full of stuff to do. Whether it's, but I mean, it's a very quest based. So you go up to a person, you talk to them, you get something to do, and then you go up to someone else, but it's not guided at all. So I think that's kind of refreshing, you know, that there's really no information. They don't give you a lot of information. It's just kind of like context clues from the game for you to kind of figure out. There's one mission where a guy basically just tells you to find this guy named Migo, and you go to this corner of the beach, and Migo is like doing this crazy, he's eating corpses and stuff like that. And you're like, what the heck is going on here? But if you get like a particular kind of flower, which the only clue is that the flower has the same name of the guy that first gave you the quest, and you give it to him, he'll like chill out and give you like an item. And then you go back and give the item to the person that gave it to you or gave you the quest. And then the quest is over and that's pretty much it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the context of the game is pretty well established, and you have like these when you first start the game, you're presented with the character creator UI, and you can create pretty much whatever you want. You have, so it's hardcore pen and paper role-playing game type thing. You can choose your race, your mm-hmm. quote-unquote class, and you are also offered the default characters that have origins, which are a specific story that you sort of are all interesting, and they have a goal within the game that you can help them achieve or not. So you can choose a custom made character, or you can choose to play one of those. I think it's probably easier if you just pick one of those.
Yeah, and if you pick one of those, you get like so you get like four people that you can be in your party, including yourself. So you get like a custom quest line for each one of them. And right. So if you pick one of those, you get to follow that quest line like you would if one of them was your companion.
Yeah. So you get a little bit more there. And they're all extremely well crafted and pretty well acted. I think the UI, as you said, is a little bit, it's really PC. It feels like a hard, it's not a bad thing necessarily, but it feels like one of those PC, and the first one was available on consoles, so it's not to say that it can be done. I'm guessing this one will become available on consoles as well,
and you can play it with controller.
But it feels like a PC game, like for PC people. And so you get into that character, and then you start on a ship, and you go to the different characters, and they tell you their story, and everything is voiced. Like everything is voiced, and you have a narrator who essentially kind of plays the part of the dungeon master.
Yeah, very much so.
Which is, I think, a clever way of doing it. You have the narrator telling you what happens and what, you know, you get into and what people think and how. So that's a good way of having an outside voice in the game to explain everything. And so as everything is voiced, it's very, it's pretty a relaxed way of following the story. It's almost like having a story read to you. But when I say it's like hardcore PC gamer, I think the combat system that you mentioned, it's turn by turn. It's turn-based combat, but it's also very, they really just throw you out into that thing and don't explain much.
Yep.
And I'm like, all right, so I have this fire casting dude who can, like, there's oil on the ground, so you'll blow up the ground thing of out at your enemies, and there's going to be flames everywhere. All right, cool. But I also have this melee character that's going to be hitting the enemy, and when I, you know, I burn the oil, my other character is getting burned too. And I'm like, what the hell? All right, so I shouldn't be close to the guy, but then how? And everyone is like one level above, and one level is apparently so hard that I can't kill anyone ever. Mm-hmm. And I don't get, like, this, just go and try it, I'm sure is great for the people who like that. But if I'm not into that kind of gameplay, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I have no idea, like, even for the quests, I love that they're trying to create an immersive world where you just have to figure things out by yourself and, like, do the thing. And this, but, like, one of the first quests is to free an elf that's been imprisoned, wrongfully imprisoned by this, like, the boss of the local mob. And so he tells you, hey, there's someone else that did the thing that I'm accused of, so go find it. And so I was walking around that area, I'm not kidding, like for 45 minutes talking to everyone, trying to get a clue about who the guy I was supposed to find was. And I was talking to everyone, and some of them were clearly not the person that, you know, they didn't have anything to do with that quest. And so I started walking around the island and found another one of the characters that is, can become part of your party. And she didn't want to come in my party because I didn't, I already had four people, and then I wanted to get her in my party, but if I should, you know, if I was to do that, then I didn't know how to dismiss another party member.
And you talk to them.
Yeah, so you talk to them, like in game, you have your four characters. You get, you click, you select another one, like your main character, and you talk to the other one you want to dismiss. But when you do, they're like, oh, it was nice traveling with you, and now I will leave forever. And I'm like, wait, dude, maybe I want to get you in the party again at some point.
They don't leave forever.
No, I know, but it's like, but it feels like it's explained nowhere. And I'm sure there's the conventions in those games that, you know, you, they go to their place and you can go talk to them again or to the inn or whatever. But all right. And before I even did that, I didn't know how to do it. And that other character I wanted in my party was stalking a prey, like a lizard man. And that lizard man, she was saying, ah, don't go warn him now, and don't, you know, I want to kill him myself. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to talk to him because God knows what's going to happen. So I get tired. I'm sick of it. I go look at the solution on the internet, and turns out that lizard man was the one I should be talking to get the, because he's the culprit in the other quest I had started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what? Like, there's specifically this character telling me not to go warn him, not to go talk to him or anything. And I know she's important because she's one of the origin characters. And at no point, like, the one clue that I had that the culprit, that would allow me to understand who the culprit is, was that he had that same speech, like, habit. He would go all the time, like the boss. And I'm like, all right, I'm talking to people, trying to see who does that. But it was that stupid lizard person that I didn't go to talk to. And no one indicated, like, it might be a lizard or he's sleeping on the beach or, like, nothing. And I don't know if I missed it, but I feel like I should be, like, I'm not enjoying that game. And that should mean that I'm taking, like, my card of card-carrying member of the, you know, PC Master Race should be taken away. And it's just, I'm not managing to find the fun in that game.
And yeah, I also have a problem with the quest system that if you go away, like I did this weekend, I left for the weekend, and I came back last night, I was playing. It doesn't really, I mean, you have your journal there, but it doesn't really tell you, like, where you kind of left off. It's like, it says, like, it's looking like the woman you're talking about, the elf lady. It's in her quest line. It says she's looking for a certain lizard. That's all it says in the quest line. And like that, and you know that when you were talking to her, she gave you some more information than that, you know, but it doesn't really keep a record of your conversation. So if you miss it, then you miss it. And my other thing is, class and race system stress me out so much because I want to pick the right one and I always feel like I'm picking the wrong one. So I chose to be the red prince or whatever, the lizard, yeah. Origin character. And I chose to be a knight, but I think lizards are better suited to be, like mage characters. Mm. And so now I feel like I make the wrong decision and that everything is wrong in the world. And I'm really thinking about wanting to go back and be a battle mage instead. So I might re-roll, but then I lost like 6 hours of game time that I already played. So I don't know, man. I think I want to keep playing this game just because I feel like I'm missing something that is going to click. Because you mentioned the oil and the fire, but that's like highly key to the way you play this game, where you have, like, you basically set up your environment to, like, destroy your enemies by mixing up elemental, like, combinations. So you put oil on the ground, and then you throw fire at it, and it does that explosion that you're talking about. And then you have one of the guys you have is an undead, like, wizard guy, and he has two wands that are poison wands to start out with. And if you use poison near the areas that the fire is, you can actually spread the fire to other enemies by just attacking the ground near the fire.
Yeah, it feels, you know, there's so much tactical depth in this game, which sounds great, you know, but it feels like XCOM to me, where I could never even understand the fun of XCOM until I played Mario plus Rabbids, right?
Yeah, you need. I agree with you though. You need that. There's something missing tutorial wise. Like the first mission where you're on the boat is supposed to be like a tutorial, but it doesn't really give you much in the way of a real combat tutorial, or like teach you kind of the do's and don'ts. Because I feel like I'm making a lot of. I feel like I'm making a lot of don'ts.
Yeah, and that's, I think, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to say, oh, but, you know, we don't need games to be holding your hand all the time. And like modern games, they never let you fail. And I think that's fair. I think there is definitely a place for games that aren't forgiving or that don't hold your hand. And I absolutely see the brilliance of this game. You know, it is incredibly well crafted and complex, and you can see all of the possibilities in this in these systems. But it's just that as someone who hasn't been immersed in this in this genre before, it feels like there's no path for me to enjoy it unless I like forcibly force myself to play it and not have fun for 15 hours before I finally understand what, you know, how the game works and where the fun is.
I think that I might consider going back to Divinity Original Sin, and just to get kind of a different feeling for the game, more fresh, I guess.
But, you know, I talked to people about that one, and I played it, actually. I played it less, not as long, but I played it a little bit. It felt very similar. And people told me, don't bother with the first one. The second one is the same but better.
Yeah, I did hear that they kind of finesse the skill system and class system a little bit in this game to make it a little bit better. I'm with you. I kind of wish there was some form of more tutorial system to kind of get me into the just get me into the systems more than what it's doing right now. I feel like I'm just making all the wrong decisions, and there's no way I can just figure it out, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. It feels like you should already know how to play the game to get in, because even games that are notoriously difficult, like the Dark Souls type games, you know what you're supposed to do, kind of, and it's hard and you fail, but you see the path to how to succeed. Here, it's just you're alone in the forest and you're like, all right, have fun. And you're looking around and going, all right, you know, this plant looks interesting. Should I be like eating the leaf or like collecting the roots? Or
that's the other thing that we should mention, is that the crafting system is incredibly foreign. you get recipes maybe, and you're basically just told, oh, you can combine items in your inventory. And that's pretty much it. Like, there's one person that you talk to, she gives you a flask and a mushroom, and the response is like, gives her a quizzical look or whatever, and she's like, just put them together. And so that's your first introduction to really crafting. But after that, like, you're not giving any guidance into how to make things other than the one minor healing potion that you're given.
Yeah, and I think the fantasy, the idea of having this immense world of possibilities where you can do whatever you want, and if you fail, you fail, is great. But it's really only fun for people who know what they're doing, and I don't at least a little bit. And so I think it's a little bit too bad that people who don't have a history with this genre are kept at bay, kind of almost intentionally. I don't think it is intentional. They're making the game for the people who love the game, and God knows there are many of them. But it's just that it's really difficult to get into if you're not already into it.
Right.
And I feel like the scores and the appreciation of that game, it's almost like the 95% average on Metacritic. I feel a little bit cheated, because I don't know that a game that keeps beginners at bay so harshly should be considered that good. I don't know if it makes sense, but and I know that you can play, you know, the game in explorer mode, which makes it super easy, but I don't want to, like, if
seems
I
seems like
play
a cop out, right?
Yeah, no, well, it's
I'm a better gamer than that. I don't need explorer mode.
There's a little bit of that, but there's also the fact that if I want a game to just explore and have a narrative adventure, then I'm not going to go play Divinity. I'm going to go play a narrative game, like, you know, Uncharted or whatever. You know, it's like, if I'm going to play this game, I would love to be invited into the systems. I don't want to be a tourist and enjoy half of the game. So it feels like the game is, there's a little bit of, like, for the people in the know, it's the best game of that genre. But for the people, but it feels like a game scored 95 plus by the entire press. It feels like it should be, I'm not saying they should make it easy, but I'm saying there should be a visible or discernible path somehow for regular people, normal humans, to at least see how to go about enjoying the game. Mm-hmm. And for this game, there isn't that. So it's not, you know, you can you can see the path. You should be able to see the path and decide for yourself if you're going to invest the time. And here it feels like, you know, some of those very complex space sims where you need a manual just to take off from the space station. So anyway, those are my impressions on Divinity 2. I was very disappointed that I didn't enjoy it more. Feels like you're a little bit in the same situation.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to like it. I wanted to like it a lot. Maybe it's because Patrick messaged me last week and was like, "Have you played it yet?" And I was like, "No, but I'm going to." And then I felt like I needed to.
Well, I mean, we both wanted to play it, and
yeah,
and
exactly. When you see I wanted a game, to play it.
When you see a game so highly regarded, it's kind of hard to not want to get some of that action. Uh-huh. And anyway. All right. Well, let's move on. I'm sure, you know, if you have other things to say about Divinity 2, whether you agree or disagree with us, please do let us know. You can comment on the blog or on Twitter or whatever, wherever you feel is appropriate. I'm sure some people will have things to say. Quickly, other releases. Cuphead is as hard as expected. people are enjoying it. I think it's probably, you know, it feels like we've seen the game so much in the past 3 years that this is exactly what everyone expected. Yeah. And there's not a lot more to say about it. Marvel versus Capcom Infinite is doing poorly sales wise in Japan, at least. I'm hearing that competitive wise, people are sort of getting warmer to it. So maybe it will beyond the slightly awkward phase where it just came out and the defiance towards Capcom recently. Maybe it's going to find its place. But it's in an awkward. I don't think it's going to be a huge commercial success. And I did want to give an update to Destiny, because I'm sure a lot of people following games have heard the fact that more and more people are saying that they're done with Destiny 2 because of the way you have the item progression in the game. Mm. And I have to say, as sad as it makes me to admit, I kind of am as well.
Oh no.
Patrick. Yeah, it's terrible. You know, the thing is, there is no incentive, like, you know how cynical gamers are.
what? It, no.
If you don't have a reason, quote unquote, to play the game, you're not going to play just for the fun of that game, right? Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, I've played, I think, like, I don't know, maybe 100 hours of Destiny 2 already, and it came out less than a month ago. So it's not like I didn't get my money's worth, but as loot grinders go, games like even Destiny 1 and, you know, Diablo, World of Warcraft, all of those, they give you reasons to keep playing the game for the vague hope of getting an item that is going to be better. And in these systems for Destiny 2, you only get better items with the weekly quests. And those are, when you reach a certain level, after, I don't know, maybe 40 hours of game time, you only get those items at the weekly quests, and those you knock down in, I don't know, maybe 3 hours less, something like that, every week. So it's really hard to justify going to play Destiny when it's just, quote unquote, for the fun of it. It sounds silly, but you know you're not going to get items out of it, because everything is very hardly capped. Very, you know, harshly capped, I guess.
It puts a time, like if I was to play WoW just for, quote unquote, the fun of it, I would play through each raid and each dungeon once and then kind of be done with it, right? It sounds like that's what a lot of people are doing, where they just kind of play through the content and they're like, that's about it for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even that. I think the way people approach it is, gosh, I really want to play it more, but I don't have like a real reason to. And mm-hmm. it's not like people are, ah, all right, I'm done. It's like, I don't have a reason to go back. I would like to, but I don't want to just play to play it. It's not like you're playing chess or like...
So they, have they reached the end of their progression?
Basically,
for the
yeah.
release? Interesting.
Basically, more or less. And I think it's a design flaw that wasn't apparent in the first few, you know, the first couple of weeks. But they haven't incorporated a good amount of replayability in the game. You know, in the whole, that's what I always say about these games. It's, that's great when you have a fun experience for the first time you go through it. But the key in those games is the replayability. The right. reason why Diablo is still pretty popular and why I go back to it very often, and the same with WoW, same with everything, is the they give you reasons to replay the same quests and dungeons and bounties a million times because you're going to get better items. You're chasing that set or you're chasing, you know, whatever, getting the perfect roll on that thing that you want and the leveling the gems that make them a little bit better. Or you have some reason. Here, it's very flimsy and... You know, so that's the key. In order to have replayability, you either have to have some sort of progression or player versus player. And there is some player versus player in Destiny, but that's not like it addresses some part of the player base, but not all of it. And even then, there are issues. So that's not to say they can't do it. I think they probably will. And we have a DLC coming in a couple of months. And the PC release is coming out this, you know, in a few weeks. And it's still an awesome game. As I said, I got already 100 hours out of it. And I'm probably going to be playing it a little bit more. And yes, I could go raid and, you know, like... But raiding is kind of its own beast. It's the only thing I didn't do too much. But even then, like, you're going to raid once or twice. But it's like you don't have that incentive, I guess.
Yeah.
So I did want to address it because I'm sure people have been hearing left and right that they're, as you said, they're done with Destiny. And I wanted to address the reason why. And that's sadly, I kind of agree. I'm still, you know, I'm talking about it. And now what I want to do is go do a couple of quests. And and tomorrow we have the weekly reset. I'm still going to go do that and get my powerful engrams that are going to raise my item level a little bit. So I'm still going to be doing it, but we'll see.
Well, once you finish for the week, you're pretty much, you're going to log off and play something else, you think?
And so you have the weekly reset on Tuesdays, and then you have things that happen on the weekends. Like there was the faction rally that happened last week. And I mean, the thing is, I think it's a relatively easy fix. So we'll see what they do. But I think it's possible to fix it somehow. But we'll see. I'll definitely keep you informed. Other big news, there was a Red Dead Redemption trailer that dropped on Thursday. What did you think?
It looks so good. I want to play it right now. So you're apparently like following the gang that John Marston was going after in the first game. So it's like a prequel, and I'm sure there'll be cameos of John Marston and stuff like that. But though I think he was in the first game, he was like part of the gang at one point, right? Or something?
I don't remember. You mean in Red Dead Redemption?
Yeah, like, I mean, that was after he had left the gang and was going after them again.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah. Anyway, no, it looks good. I don't know how much more there is to say about it besides just, like, if it comes out sometime soon, that'd be nice.
So still, it's still scheduled for spring. They didn't go any deeper into details. And I guess in keeping with the theme of this episode, I was disappointed by that trailer.
Oh, no.
I know.
Patrick, why?
Well, it looks... The sceneries look really good.
Uh-huh.
So first, let me say this before I even get into that. I think them doing another 90 seconds trailer, like the first one was maybe 30 seconds, And this one is 90 seconds. It's with no information whatsoever. I think is getting a little bit old. I understand that they're Rockstar and that Red Dead Redemption 2 will be amazing and that we'll all rush to buy it, and I certainly will. But I thought that is them leaning a little bit too much on their star power. I think it's, I don't want to say disrespectful, but, you know, it's kind of, they're beginning to push it a little bit. I hope that we get, like, systems, playthrough, gameplay details at some point fairly soon, because this trailer was almost nothing. It didn't tell us anything we didn't infer already. I mean, the sceneries look good, but honestly, the animations of the characters look a little bit stiff. The voice acting is good, as we would expect from Rockstar, and you know they're bad guys, and at some point someone screams something, and at some point someone you know roughs someone up, and all right, so it's a Rockstar game. What is, like, what are you telling me about that game? For me it was very light on, it didn't make me excited.
Did it get you excited? Oh yeah, of course it did. Come on. No, it was great. It was great. I mean, it was short. I wanted more, and so I think if we're reading the tea leaves, I think we might get something more at the PlayStation Experience. And we'll get something big there, or I mean, this is a little bit of a stretch, but probably maybe another trailer at the Video Game Awards show that happens every year in December and stuff like that. But I mean, come on, man, it's Red Dead Redemption. Let's get more Red Dead Redemption. That's all I want. I just want more Red Dead Redemption.
I agree with that, but imagine that this was a trailer for another game. Imagine that was Cowboy City,
but it's not.
Yeah, no, I know. But I guess I would have loved to be excited for this on its own merit and not for it to have to use its name as, you know, the half of the excitement it produces. And I think
made Red Dead Redemption great was the kind of off the beaten path side quest lines and stuff like that that were like, you know, the one where you went inside this guy's house and you found out like later he was a cannibal and you were basically bringing him people to eat and stuff like that.
Oh geez. I didn't remember that one.
Oh yeah. No, the one that, there was another guy who was outside, sitting on his rocking horse, and he kept like asking you to bring stuff to him, like flowers and stuff for his wife. And she's like, oh, she's inside. She's not feeling well. You know, she'll, but if you bring me a flower, it'll make her feel better. And you eventually go inside the house and his wife is like completely dead, like way past dead, decomposed and stuff like that. And you're just like, oh God, this guy is like crazy. What am I doing? You know, it's like, it's stuff like that makes what made the game great more than you're a cowboy.
I mean, for me, it was like being a cowboy and, you know, just riding along in those incredible environments. It's just, I'm not commenting on my excitement for Red Dead Redemption 2. I'm just commenting on the excitement of this trailer, which I thought was flimsy. But all right. Anyway, good news for Assassin's Creed Origins. There will be next year a zero combat mode coming, meaning it's going to be kind of a explore ancient Egypt mode where you will have like almost like guided tours and lectures and stuff to explain to you how that society worked. I think that's really exciting for a game where the historical settings have been so important for so long. That might even almost convince me to get the game if I was hesitant.
Are you going to wait till next year, or are you going to actually play the game when it comes out?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's coming out on the day of Mario.
Yeah, the day Odyssey, the day of everything else.
Yeah. So we'll see. But I'm that's something that could be really cool. Mm-hmm. I hope it's not a thing that you download and then you launch it twice and then you're done and you feel like you should be doing your homework when you're not doing it and you should. But it seems like a great natural idea.
It could be cool to, I mean, they extend this to their later games and stuff. It could be a cool, like, learning tool, like in schools and stuff like that. Maybe,
You seem less convinced than I am.
I don't know. I don't see what its appeal and use is going to be. I'd rather just play the video game.
Well, I mean, discovering what ancient Egypt was like.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Or as the Ubisoft people think that ancient Egypt was like, at least.
I suppose that's one way of looking at it. Here's something interesting. There is a whole kerfuffle between Bluehole and Fortnite and Epic. So Bluehole, of course, is the developer of PlayerUnknown's Battleground, and Epic, through its game Fortnite, has been the first company to integrate a Battle Royale mode, so basically a PUBG-like, in their game. And the interesting thing is that, of course, PUBG uses the Unreal Engine, which Epic is the developer of, and Fortnite is a game early access that you need to pay for, except their Battle Royale mode is free to play and free to access. Mm-hmm. So it's almost kind of this, like, backdoor into people getting to experience the game and maybe buy it. But so Bluehole was super not happy about this, and they made some very clumsy communication saying that they were very concerned about Fortnite copying their game and that they were contemplating further action. And then they went on to explain that they didn't mean that they wanted to own the genre of Battle Royale modes, but that because of their working relationship through the Unreal Engine, they were concerned that Epic would, like, mess with the engine to make it less good for them and at the same time benefit their other endeavor, which was Fortnite. Like, I didn't buy it either. But I'll say what I think about this. I guess it transpired a little bit, but what did you think of this?
I just saw it. I didn't know the Epic, like, Unreal Engine, like, connection. But I was kind of just watching this from afar, and I think that it's you got to be careful, because you can't just go after someone for, like, making the same genre a game that you made, otherwise there'd never be any innovation at all. So I don't know. I don't think that Bluehole has that much of a leg to stand on, but the fact that Epic was working with them throughout the development experience of a PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, there could be something there that they're like, well, if we find out that they had brought this idea to the Fortnite team, like, during development, like, before PUBG even came out, then there could be something there that would be somewhat infringing,
Yeah. I think, there's the thing is, PUBG has been out for almost a year now, 9 months at least, and it's so successful that we've been mentioning for a few weeks now, we're going to see, Battle Royale modes in so many games. And yeah. So
this seems
all,
really soon.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe.
But maybe it's Epic, so they have this big, like, train of developers that they can just shove into the the release cycle for a battle royale style, so it wouldn't take them as long.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to see many of them like within weeks. You know, they're going to be coming towards the end of the year, and there's going to be like there are even some on mobile that are coming. It's not the first ones that have been announced. I think it's the first one that came out. But the thing is, there are a couple of things. First of all, as you said, you can't copyright or trademark a gameplay concept. What you can copyright is story or character, that kind of thing. And trademark is obviously for a brand or like an actual mark. But it's like video games are just like any other creative endeavor. You can't, you know, you don't have copyright in fashion or cooking or God in like movies, right? That's why you have like three movies about asteroids crashing on Earth coming out in roughly the same year. That is not something that you can, and that's how genres evolve in video games forever. We've had like fighting games genres and RTSs and MMORPGs and RPGs like and FPSs like that is. Doom would be, I mean, id would be upset about having created the FPS genre. And like, there are a million examples. It's obvious. And not only did Bluehole, I mean, they got Brendan Green and they licensed the thing and like they did it by the book, but their game is based on a Battle Royale mode, which came from the movie Battle Royale, right? That's like, it's very, very, hypocritical. I mean, I understand that they're sore, that it's the guys we were working with and they're, you know, copying our game, and they even referenced it during the promotion, which I can see how they would have done it for SEO, you know, the Fortnite people. But it's not like they could have done the same thing, Fortnite, and created a battle royale mode and not even mentioned PUBG. To me, it felt like a tip of the hat. And we don't want to live in a world where game developers have to be like, pretend like they don't play other people's games, because if they do, then they run the risk of incurring some kind of lawsuit. And honestly, that thing by Bluehole has, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm convinced they have no leg to stand on the, you know, we don't want them to make the game based on the same genre. It's ridiculous. It's impossible. So the only thing that sort of outburst created was create ill will towards Bluehole. Not a lot, but some. When they had nothing but goodwill, like they were crushing it, and they still are very much crushing it. And I don't know, like they were saying, some people might think that we integrated PUBG into Fortnite, and players might be confused. And it's like, no, they won't. Like, no one's going to think, oh, I don't want to play PUBG, but there's PUBG in Fortnite, I'm going to go play it. And yes, Fortnite's Battle Royale mode had 1 million players when it launched, but it's free to play, you know? It's free to play, and of course there are people that are going to see this. So anyway, it was Bluehole being unsavvy business people, and it was a little bit too bad. And I hope they, just walk it back and just do this quietly. If they want to talk to Epic about this, then let them talk. Like, they're not going to switch engines. They're not going to, like, and Epic is not going to hinder their ability to use the Unreal Engine. That's ridiculous. And Bluehole said, we developed stuff that enables the Unreal Engine to accommodate 100 people in engine at the same time. That wasn't possible before. All right, great. If you think you've contributed that much, like maybe discuss something with Epic. But that was the wrong way of going about it. Like, definitely wrong way. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I wasn't very happy when I saw it. Apparently, Bluehole is going to spin off PUBG as an entirely separate company. And I would suspect they will sign up with Tencent to bring the game to China or someone else, but it seems they're talking to Tencent already, so that wouldn't be surprising. And I think they're going to be fine, even though there are going to be a million copycats. Voice actors are stopping their strike. Do you remember there was a strike that got started a while back?
Finally.
You know, there are a couple of things that are interesting here. First, I don't think we saw an effect of the strike, and maybe it's because development time hasn't caught up to the strike yet, but I think people were fine with the voice actors being on strike because we still got okay acting. And the other thing is their main demand was, we want residuals. Like, we want a cut of the sales if the games do well. And they didn't get that, which I think is pretty obvious that they wouldn't, because let's be honest, they get residuals in movies because, you know, actors' names drive sales. In video games, as much as I love Nolan North and, you know, all of the famous voice actors, I'm not going to check out a game. I'm not going to buy a game specifically because that voice actor is playing a character in there. I don't know if you would, but
no, I'm pretty much the same boat. The trick is that these voice actors, they are in so many games per year that you can't just be like, hey, I'm going to buy all of Nolan North's games because I really like Nolan North, you know, versus like a Matthew McConaughey or something like that that's in like one or two movies a year. I just don't see the direct and Nolan North isn't even the best example. If you think of what's the girl's name? The girl that played the Horizon Zero Dawn, and she was Chloe in Life is Strange. I don't remember her name. Anyway, that's part of the problem. but she when they came out with the Before the Storm game, Ashley Birch, thank you. Before the Storm game, that Life is Strange Before the Storm, she wasn't in that because of the voice actor strike, but that game still sold pretty well, you know? And I don't know. I heard from that game is that when you hear not Ashley Birch doing Chloe, you're like, that doesn't sound like Chloe. And then like an hour later, you're like, you don't really notice it anymore, you know?
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I think they should be getting some form of higher recognition, but getting residuals when the developers on the game don't get that, you know, seems a little crazy to me.
That's the main issue, I think, in the world of video games. It's definitely something that raised a few eyebrows when they were asking for residuals, because comparing it with movies is not an accurate comparison because of all the reasons we described. And there are a lot of people who work a lot harder. I'm sure the voice actors work really hard, but there are a lot of people that work harder in the development, which might be a problem within itself. You know, the horrible crunch time and the dedication that those developers and artists put into the games. Maybe they shouldn't. Maybe it should be more regulated. Maybe there should be more union negotiations. But that I don't feel like, you know, I'm a dirty socialist Frenchman. So if I felt like this was the voice actors were due residuals for their work, I would probably say it. I think in this case, it felt unfair to everyone else. And there might be other problems there. But that's probably a different issue. And there were things that were addressed through the agreements that were struck between the Voice Actors Guild and the industry leaders. There were things like the actors get more information about the roles they're going to be playing. They get like they get to know if they're going to have to say things they're not comfortable with, like racial slurs and stuff like that. They get more you know, they get guarantees on the amount of time they use their instrument, basically their voice, which can get tired or damaged. These kinds of things, they do get more money if they work a lot, you know, up to an extent. But for a lot of people that are the smaller voice actors, it's probably that don't make a lot of money. That's probably going to help. So ultimately, they didn't get their, you know, the things that was the most visible in their demands. But it seems like they got a more fair deal in all of the other areas.
Which well, I will is say that I think thing. that the like making sure their voice is rested and they don't have to like go as crazy when it comes to like how long they're in the booth for and stuff like that. That's a good thing because yeah. They have to protect the moneymaker, right?
Which yeah, is, of course.
Yeah.
and you know, there are so many voice actors that work so much that we never really realize, you know, every single like little bad guy falling and going, like all of those yeah. have to be recorded, you know, and that's not easy work. Like
you're and not just that they have to do it over and over and over again until they yeah. get the right thing that the game director says is the appropriate herpla sound, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And they have to do like 15 different ones so that you, yeah, you hear exactly. different, like, yeah, it's certainly not easy work. So, but that sticking point of residuals, I think was never going to be, it opens Pandora's box.
Well, maybe they didn't actually want it, you know, in negotiation, you ask for a little too much, so they'll roll it back a little bit. So maybe they didn't want it. They just wanted the voice kind of, stuff. And as soon as they said residuals, they're like, we're not getting you that, but maybe we'll get you the other thing, you know?
It's possible. It feels like they did want it.
But yeah. I'm looking for the bright side here. Yeah.
Nintendo is doing really well. 9-year high on their stock price. That mostly, I did mention that getting Honor of Kings, what's it called in the West? Arena of Valor. It's a MOBA. It's basically the mobile MOBA. Mm-hmm. So getting it on the Switch was a really big deal, and apparently it drove the stock pretty high because of the potential for growth in China. So that's good news for Nintendo. They can't do wrong with the Switch, which is definitely not the song the tune I was singing a year ago. But I'm happy to have been proven wrong, definitely. And I think I mentioned the presence of, maybe I didn't mention it, there's a version of the NES version of Golf, of the game Golf, in the Switch. Mm-hmm. And it people were wondering, oh, did they include a virtual console in the Switch, or like, do they have plans to develop this further, or what happened? And apparently it is a really homage. Touching, yeah. It's even more than an homage. It's like a tribute and a protection charm for the console, because it's a game that was developed by Satoru Iwata, a very loved and well known president of Nintendo, and who passed away only a little while ago. And you can actually play the game, apparently, on the day of his death, the anniversary of his death, if you do certain like motions with the yeah. motion controllers, specifically on that day. And it's just, it wasn't even really intended to be found. It's a omamori, which in Japanese, it's like, it's a charm. And they wanted a little piece of Iwata to be in every Switch console, which is such a sweet, like, wow, this is like the opposite of Blue Hole yelling at Epic. It's like the best feel-good PR story you can get, especially since I believe they didn't necessarily want it to be found. It's just heartwarming. The nostalgia box craze is just like the Battle Royale craze in full swing. We're getting the Atari box. We are getting details. Well, let's talk about the Commodore 64 Mini first, which will be coming out in 2018. That's just like a Commodore 64 box where you have like, it's just like the NES Classic and the Super NES Classic, except with a Commodore 64, which mm-hmm. my answer to this is I loved my Amiga, but you're not Nintendo. This is not gonna sell. And I'm part of the crowd that used the Amiga a lot, and that, you know, I didn't have a Commodore 64, but I don't think this is gonna sell. But more interestingly, the Atari Box console, we have details. Oh my god, this is so bad. It's gonna be basically a PC with AMD hardware, Linux software, operating system with some sort of Atari emulator in it, Atari 2600. And so far you're like, okay, maybe, except it's going to launch late spring 2018. It's going to cost $249 minimum. Ooh. And it's going to be crowdfunded through Indiegogo sometime in the fall.
What is going on?
Doing? Who is... What? Like, I mean, maybe if you look at it as a PC that's going to run Linux for $250, but you're not going to be running... I mean, you can run Steam, like Linux Steam on that if you want to, but on that hardware, you're not going to be running anything anyway. Who's going to... Am I crazy? This is crap, right?
No, this is shit. I don't know if I'm... Am I allowed to say that, the word on the show? I don't know.
It's fine.
Okay. No,
when it's justified, when it's warranted, you can. Okay. And in this case, wow.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you want to buy this versus, like... I guess it's a cheaper version of a PlayStation, but like what does it really have in it that you can't get out of like an Apple TV, you know? Well, or even
it's a small PC for $250. I'm sure, like, I don't know,
man. It doesn't seem like anything that, and just the fact that it's going to be crowdfunded too leaves a bad taste in my mouth as well. And I don't know. It just doesn't. I don't think it's going to sell. I really don't.
I mean, the product itself, I agree. I would struggle to find. I'm sure there are going to be some people who want it. You know, there's going to be a few dozen, maybe a few hundred people who want it. But like, then asking them to pay for it ahead, like on a crowdfunding platform, that makes it, as you said, like it makes it a lot worse. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't seem like something that's going to work out. We'll see, I guess. Good news. Phil Spencer is now part of the senior leadership team at Microsoft. And that's cool for Phil. I'm sure he's happy. But that's probably also cool for gamers and Xbox lovers. I think everyone kind of agreed over the past few months, what we've seen is that the Xbox seemed like far down the list of concerns at Microsoft, and Satya Nadella was not really very much invested in the strategy that would make the Xbox One a success. And the hope here is that Phil Spencer, being part of that senior leadership team of like roughly 20 people, he's going to be able to present his cases more strongly and make the company care about that department, you know, the area of games, a little bit more. I hope that's what's happening, and not that he's getting kind of a bone for being a good soldier for a long time and, you know, getting him to shut up about games. But
I think that. I mean, he's basically going to be reporting directly to Satya Nadella now.
Right.
And so what that means is you're, instead of having a one-on-one meeting with someone who is going to report to the CEO and will maybe pass on your concerns or your wants and dreams for your department, you actually get to talk directly to the CEO and have those meetings and stuff like that. And so I think it is going to be a good thing. I don't know how much this will really change the current state that Xbox is in, but I think it will give them some form of a leg up for whatever the next generation of consoles is going to be.
Maybe, yeah. I guess we'll see, but it sounds like good news.
Yep.
little bit of bad news. There, Blizzard has announced that we're not going to get a Diablo announcement at BlizzCon. I say a little bit of bad news because I'm happy they're managing our expectations, because if they hadn't, what everyone would be talking about is, oh my God, are we going to hear about a new Diablo game at BlizzCon? And we're about a month away now, so it's probably good they're letting us know, nope, don't get excited. We did, however, hear that basically we know that we're getting a new WoW expansion. Ion Hazakostas pretty much said so in his latest video. So that's pretty exciting for lovers of World of Warcraft. And there was also an interesting job offer on the Blizzard site that was pulled immediately after it was posted, but too late, of course, everyone noticed, that said they wanted someone for a mobile MMORTS project, which is kind of a little bit of... What?
let's take all the buzzwords and throw them all into one one job application, you know?
I'm not sure what an MMORTS would be. A lot of people were throwing around the words Clash of Clans and Clash Royale, and obviously that sounds like the closest approximation of what that might maybe be, look like. Any ideas on what an MMORTS would be?
What was that game that the guy made in the StarCraft engine? StarCraft universe or whatever. It's that. I have no idea. I mean, it's going to be like, you hold your phone to the side and you move around, you select things with your fingers or whatever, and then you go up to someone and you talk to them, and you type with your phone. I don't know, man. It's hard to put this into the what you're thinking about, but I don't know. Maybe Blizzard's known to kind of blow people's minds with new kind of ideas and stuff like that. So maybe
I mean, usually they perfect other people's ideas that they've enjoyed. And mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, RTS, yes, I can see how that could work on a mobile. Maybe there's even like Iron Marines, which just came out, which is an interesting riff on RTS on mobile. It's very RTS period, like it just happens to be on mobile, but still. But MMO, like you each get a little bit of the map and build up your base and collect resources, like it's weird. And it could very much be something that they're, you know, thinking about, and someone didn't edit the job application properly, and this is just a project they're thinking about, and that's going to disappear and not going to be developed further, and we're never going to hear about it. But it's still an interesting thing. And the fact that they pulled it is like, oh, well, maybe that did mean something then. But it's probably not for this BlizzCon, though, so we'll see.
Nah.
And I think that is going to be it for the news we have for today. Thank you very much for being on the show, Ed. Why don't you tell people where they can get more of you if they wish to?
You can follow me on Twitter at @Adesis, and I stream live every Monday night around 7 p.m. Eastern time. Tonight I'll be playing a little bit of Prey, so I'm looking forward to that. And I work for a website called 4playernetwork.com, and you can watch their streams at twitch.tv/4playerpodcast, or just 4pp.tv is the easiest way. They have a podcast every Thursday at 8:30 or 9:30 Eastern time. And I actually just got back from PAX about a month ago, and we recorded a podcast with my impressions. I was the only one there representing the website from PAX. And so if you want to kind of see kind of the newish, freshest games that are coming out soon in the next couple months to about a year from now, go check that out. I think that is currently on our YouTube page, but if not, it'll be posted on the website shortly. So
cool. You played Cuphead, right?
I played Cuphead. Yeah. That game is hard. That game is hard.
So if you want to get all of the impressions from PAX, then just go to 4player.pp.
Yeah, 4pp.tv is the best way to...
Sorry, 4pp.tv, yeah.
4pp.tv to get the Twitch page, and if you want, just search for 4Player Podcast on YouTube, and you'll find it very easily.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. You can leave a review and a few stars on iTunes if you wish to do so. If you want to support us a little bit, that would be very much appreciated. It takes a couple of seconds and it helps. You can also find this show at frenchspin.com, and you'll find another show called The Phileas Club there. And we did, for a recent episode, we dove into Venezuela. We actually had a lengthy conversation with a person who had to leave Venezuela because of all of the things that are happening there, and currently resides in Colombia. And if you've ever wondered what's happening in Venezuela, I'm sure you've heard about that something is happening there. We had a really good conversation, and Saul's input was invaluable for me to understand how things got messed up there, and you know how they got to that situation. And it didn't happen in one day, and it was like really interesting to follow along everything that happened and see, quite alarming, the situation there and now. So I mean, I think it's a really valuable listen, not because of me, but because of him mainly. So if you think you might be interested, just go check it out. It's at frenchspin.com, and the show is called The Phileas Club. It's the second to last episode. We had a bunch of episodes, and all of them, I think, are pretty good. So go check that out. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back in about a couple of weeks. Talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.